Yes, my precious.
Welcome to Still Entitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
And
I'm Eric.
Guest podcaster.
Yeah, longtime tested readers will recognize Eric, rather, from our the first time we flew the DJI Phantom out on Treasure Island. You came out and basically, you kind of just taught us how to not kill ourselves, I guess, or someone else.
Yeah, that's
basic,
right.
Basic,
yeah.
High level, here's what you can do.
But they're totally suitable for hunting small animals.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
They're not.
And we used one as a camera, right? Yeah, we exactly. Hovered one, used it as a bee camera.
Uh-huh. And flew it around basically over Treasure Island, which I think you can't fly on now, right? Is it in the no-fly zone?
I haven't kept up with Treasure Island.
What's here? But, yeah. Anyway.
Depends who you ask, I think.
But there's other stuff that you're kind of an adventurer. And I say kind of, but I really mean you're an adventurer. And you go around the world to different places and shoot video of stuff that is amazing that I can't imagine seeing in person.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, the last one was this volcano thing, which is one
has been blowing up.
Has been blowing up. Yeah, I'm getting calls from. Actually, my mother's getting calls from her friends saying seeing it on TV. So when that happens, you know, it's reaching the right places.
Real saturation.
Can you tell that story for people who might not know?
Yeah. So I about maybe 10 days ago, I had a thought that maybe we should fly these phantoms into a volcano. And I thought about this because I kept seeing these amazing volcano pictures coming over my social feeds in Iceland, from Iceland, because I have some friends who are there shooting. And it just seemed like nobody had gotten that close with a camera to shoot, you know, really wide angle shots of a volcano. So I sent literally a one line email that said, "Hey, do you think we could fly a phantom into the volcano?" And the guy said, "Yeah, I think we could do it." But then after, you know, like a week passed and I didn't hear anything. And then one day I got a call or an email and it said a Saturday. The problem is it was Thursday when I got the message.
Oh, my God.
So
and you were here?
And I was here. Yeah.
What is it, a 10-hour flight from here?
Yeah, it's like, with the connection, with the proper connections, 12 hours. And then it's a, you know, like a 12 to 15-hour drive to the...
12 to 15-hour drive.
Well, it's not that big. You can drive around it in not too long, but this is in the middle of the country on a glacier. So you have to get there the right way. And then there are no roads leading to it at the end. So you have to go off-roading for four hours.
So this is a 24-hour journey that you have to be there in 2 days.
Right. So,
wow. That's an adventure. That's the definition.
That is the very definition. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Under adventure, that's what it says. When Iceland calls, you go.
Yeah. And luckily, I've been so busy, I was still pretty much packed from the last adventure. So, you know, we were using these things at Burning Man with Lightbridge to do live HD.
And I want to talk about that in a second.
Yeah, we can talk about that. And so I basically took those cases and stuck them on a plane. I left the next morning and flew there. I got in very early in the morning and basically got in a car. We bought gas masks and some other stuff.
Oh, right, because that's the thing you
did
need.
Did you have active oxygen in the gas mask or just filter?
We didn't. It was just filter.
Okay.
They were good ones, apparently. They were recommended to us, highly recommended. And I guess the reason that we had only that window to go is that the poison gas goes a certain, you know, goes with the wind.
Oh, right, there's poison gas coming out of those things.
Yeah, it's mostly silicon dioxide.
So it's wind that's...
It's wind. Yeah, so I was on the Weather Channel this morning and I talked all about wind and the weather, which made them very happy. because, you know, we had this window where the wind would be blowing slightly in the correct direction and there would not be crazy dust storm.
Right.
And it was a 24-hour window. And when I arrived, it was raining. It was terrible. The weather was terrible when I arrived. And they just said, well, the forecast says it's going to be good. But, you know, meanwhile, there's a T-shirt in a storefront that says, like, if you want different weather, wait 5 minutes, you know, in Iceland.
Right, right, right.
So what's your, like, go, no go when you get there? And I assume there's like base camp set up or you're at a hotel 20 miles away or something like that. And then you have to hike in the last few miles or off-road in the last few miles?
Off-road in the last 4 hours or so. And so, yeah, they were really excited. We stopped at this really cute farmhouse with, you know, sheep, like nibbling on the windows because it had, like dirt or whatever. It had grass on the walls. It was really cool.
All right.
But it's the highest place you can stay in Iceland, and it's like 470 meters or something.
Right.
Really remote. So the go, no go is basically, we're going to go unless it's way too dangerous to go, which we can only discover by going. Okay. So there's a checkpoint, it's, you know, 2 hours in or something, and it's a police checkpoint, and you go there and you present your credentials, press credentials, things like that. And that's the point at which you get the go, no go.
Wow.
And so you get there, you get the go, and it's this quadcopter you have in front of you that you take there.
Did you only bring one? You brought two.
I brought three because, you know.
Yeah. Be prepared. Right.
Yeah, I was prepared.
And then how long did you fly?
Well, we flew. So we could drive. Actually, first we could only get about two kilometers away, you know, like a mile, just under a mile and a half. And that's like that's at the edge of the range of a stock Phantom. And I didn't think to configure it to go longer range because, you know, you can hack it to do that. And so we just said, okay, we just have to fly anyway. You know, they're not going to let us any closer. So we flew, and I could make it just in front of the lip of that caldera, you know? And they have returned to home when they lose signal, so it kept turning around. So the video is funny because it goes there, and then it turns around and goes home. And then you can see me. I take control and turn it around again. No, you're going. And then I sent it up a little bit, which let us get at least over so we could look down into it. Right. But it's still, you can see the whole, it's a giant lake of bubbling magma with like these huge explosions throwing lava way up in there. So, but I just couldn't quite get there. And I was a little bummed. I thought, well, it's good footage, but it's not what we could get.
Right. Because you need the SD card, the micro SD card you need the quadcopter to survive.
Well, I needed to be able to get it there. Like it wouldn't even, these things are so, they're configured to just come home if there's something wrong.
So you had GPS at least.
Oh yeah, we had GPS and every time we would almost get there, it would turn around. So I thought it was over, but then one of the police guys, they came because they thought this stuff was cool. First of all, cool, but also very useful for what they could potentially use it for.
Right.
Including search and rescue and just general survey. So, you know, he said, how much closer do you have to be? And I just thought, oh, we got him.
Mythbusters, we've had a bunch of those moments over the years.
Yeah. But then he left. And I thought we had him.
Oh.
And he came back about 20 minutes later and he said, he actually went to check with somebody, which was amazing. And he just said, okay, well, you can't drive any closer. We checked the rules. You can't drive closer, but there's nothing to prohibit you from walking closer. We don't recommend it because it's really dangerous, but you can, I'm not saying you can do it. I'm just saying there's nothing to prevent you from doing it.
Wow. And meanwhile, you're wearing gas masks this whole time?
No, we hadn't actually worn them. But, you know, later I learned that you might get some irritation from silicon dioxide, but all it does is shorten your lifespan. Like it doesn't, there's no like...
silicosis? Is that it?
I don't know what it does. They found dead birds in the area and stuff. So
no immediate effect.
Probably should have been wearing them. Those birds were smokers.
I mean, you can see the plume going with the wind. So we thought we'd be okay. We put them on eventually when we got close because we started smelling sulfur. So we walked.
Devil also came out and put out a welcome mat.
Yeah.
These things have telemetry. So you knew like your range, distance, the height, but they don't tell you how hot it is over there. So how did you get a sense? And you had the live feed from the GoPro. How did you get a sense of like how far you could take it?
Well, they do have telemetry, which is very useful, but we were recording locally, so I turned all the telemetry off.
So it's not burning onto the...
Yeah, I wanted a clean feed. And we had a second unit where we could have turned telemetry on, but I didn't have an assistant, and it was night. You know, it got dark during that time, and we didn't have the manpower we needed to do it.
Okay, so just from a practical level, pausing here, you've traveled for 12 hours, driven for 15, set out from the farmhouse with the sheep to do this thing, and it's getting dark. There's a point at which you reach a natural limit of being able to stay frosty and stay awake, isn't there? Or are you trying to catnap in the car on the way there and trading driving? And
yeah, they were all relatively well rested because they live there.
Right.
The guy who drove anyway. And so I slept for 3 hours on the way there. And the rest was really just adrenaline fueled.
Because it's, you know, so just, crazy cool, you're so, what you're getting to do.
I mean, there's a... there's a volcano there.
Yeah, no, I know. And, I get that. I just, it's like, there's, it, it's just, you still something you have to manage. Your energy is one of the things you have to manage.
Absolutely.
But, were you worried about getting it documented, the whole thing, like the trip and the adventure?
Yeah,
we
have this thing, new thing called DJI Feats, you know, like what can you do with one of the things that you can't do? And this was the first, and it ended up being the first because, you know, I planned this trip kind of unrelated, but it was perfect for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we literally hired a cameraman while I was in the air, to Iceland, and I just sent an email to the guy organizing there, Einar, and I said, we need a cameraman. Can you get one? Just do it. When I land, just yes, whatever, you know, whatever it is. And so a guy came with us, and he was a experienced filmmaker there, and nice. He came and documented.
That's great.
So that's why the video has all the behind the scenes with that, where we're mic'd.
Right. And you're thinking specifically on your way there, you're thinking about how this thing will assemble as a mini doc, as what kind of coverage you're going to need and what you're going to ask for and how it's going to cut together.
Right. And what you're talking about, you know, energy and being tired actually factored into all of that. Because everyone was so tired that you could only shoot so much. You know, my natural instinct is to shoot everything. Like, you're always rolling because you never know when the thing's going to happen. Like,
right. Yeah.
You're denied access or the thing blows or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he shot as much as he could.
Awesome. And then,
but there was definitely a limit.
A natural human limit.
So when you were flying around in the caldera or above the caldera, anything kind of unexpected or weird? Like, could you use the remote fly to just set up course and fly and then bring it back when it was done and not worry about RC at all? Or like, what's it like flying a quad inside an active volcano?
Well, so first we walked 1 kilometer closer. So we have the distance. We walked to the lava. So that in theory would make it really easy for us to be able to fly to it. And
is the ground getting hot at this point or anything?
No, it was really cold there. I was like,
damn it.
I was totally bundled up. But the flow stopped just in front of us. And
like just in front, like 100 meters or like no, just like in front, like 10
kick
feet?
It, you know, it, you could, you were right up to it, but it was older flow. So it wasn't like glowing red anymore. I don't know when it came out.
That seems worse because then it's still really hot, but you can't tell.
Well, I didn't walk on it. I stayed.
Okay.
I stayed right at the edge because we had flying things. So we set up and flew in, and it was easy to get all the way there. Still, it took probably 2 minutes at full speed to reach the caldera. So it was still kind of more than half a mile away, maybe 2/3 of a mile.
Wow. And
I did all the tricks. Like, I turned GPS off. We had the wind to our back so I could fly faster and, you know, all these things to get maximum
amount of shooting
time.
That's a lot of time just straight flying.
It is. And flying back takes longer because the wind's behind us. Oh. I mean, the wind's behind us, which is great.
Right.
It's blowing everything.
Yeah. And you have power management for that. Oh my goodness.
So the weird thing that happened was every time we flew above, directly above the lava, I would lose both video feed and remote control.
Really?
Yeah. So that was unexpected. And it had nothing to do with range because we had the range was easy by that point. And it was consistent. So you fly over the thing, video might go out.
Even like the cooled lava 20 feet in front of you or the stuff that's still red hot and further?
No, the explosive lava up front and the steam coming off of it.
What do you, that's far out. Some sort of radio interference?
Yeah, some kind of radio interference was happening there. And sure enough, there are, you know, we did research later and you see all those pictures of the lightning in the ash cloud. There's definitely static going on, even though this wasn't a particularly ashy.
It's a secret underground base.
This must be astonishing to get the footage back when you haven't been able to see what the camera's been seeing.
Right. So I was able to get to see a lot of it, which was great.
Right.
But every time I tried to get that really close shot, we wanted to basically see how close we could get without losing the aircraft.
Right.
And that was basically impossible. Like it had a life, it had a preservation instinct.
Wow.
That kept it. You know what I should do is I should speed the footage up and release it because it just keeps turning around and trying to come home. Constantly.
I would love to see that.
Yeah.
I
mean, 3 laws of drone body.
Right. Go home. Get home.
Go home. Yeah.
Wow. So that was the last most recent adventure you were on.
That was like last week.
A week and a half. Well, we should mention that the GoPro melted.
Yeah.
Too. So I brought it here so we could see it.
We have the melted GoPro.
But it didn't eat the footage, which, I mean,
testament to the GoPro where if it dies, it writes the end of the file or you can recover the file.
Yes. Yeah. So that saved us. And look, in this retaining clip on the Zenmuse gimbal is also, if we had lost that, the GoPro would have fallen, which would have been bad too. But you know, all I saw from the ground was the video feed went out and it never came back. And I thought, okay, well, either the video feed went out or the whole thing is gone.
Right.
One of the two.
So you just got to wait and see if it flies back to you.
Yeah. I initiated fail-safe return to home because I could have still had radio control. And I think about 4 minutes later, we saw the lights and it was coming back. And
wow.
Yes. And I was just hoping the video.
Excruciating. Does it have power management such that it will fly back with the last bit of power it needs to get to you?
Yes. So it does know how far away it is from you. And it uses that distance to
But it might not know if the wind's really bad, so it could
misestimate. Yeah,
but and it'll really go to a certain height also to try to like fly at a certain height and then descend to you as far as schools. Yeah.
Right. So in this case, I mean, it's really conservative. So even with a lot of wind, it would probably make it home, you know.
So I guess, I mean, you could be discovering something kind of new out there, right? Because there's not a lot of people testing radio interference of molten lava at volcanoes, right? Like, you realize you're actually out on the edge of some interesting scientific precipice.
It's a probe.
Yeah.
It's a probe. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a scientific probe. Oh,
yeah, the first thing we thought was, you should put sensors on it and be running. You're talking about autonomous missions out there. Like, these things do support kind of map-based waypoint support flying. So you could just program it to do some kind of transect.
Do a loop around the
Cool.
I mean, because you think about volcanologists, if they want to monitor they plant sensors before bad things happen, and then rely on them to be there. But once stuff happens, then that barrier is for everyone that's not wearing like a big, I don't know what those suits are called, the bunny suits with the reflective stuff on the outside. Right. And I mean,
but you would never wear one of those close to this thing.
Proximity suits is what they're called.
Is that right?
Spock's outfit.
You own one?
Yeah.
In Star Trek,
it's aluminized Kevlar, and you usually wear it either it's built into effectively fireman turnout gear, or it's a shell you wear out on the outside of fireman turnout gear. Mm. Okay. So it's fireman turnout gear is already non-flammable. This adds a layer of thermal protection of bouncing the infrared and the infrared back away from you.
Right.
Yeah. The scale of this eruption was, I mean, I just can't imagine that anyone would go anywhere near it.
Yeah.
You know, there's just no way.
Well, because you saw a video of, I think it was somebody in Vanuatu or something, went down into the caldera, like walked down into the caldera with one of your turnout suits on, one of your
proximity suits.
Thanks. And like got down right up against the, and it was terrifying. It was, you look at this and you think these people are absolutely out of their minds.
And I read an interview with him, and they were, I can't remember if it was a man or a woman or it was a couple, but I read an interview with one of them saying that it was the most they'd ever feared for their lives. Like the protection you're getting from the thing is very minimal. It feels like at that point, you still feel like you're in an oven.
Right.
And pockets can move around too, right?
You know. Yeah. Man, and then you've got to have a lightsaber battle.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan. Your legs get chopped off. No.
Yeah,
right. Is it true that if you fall into lava, you don't actually sink into it? You just float on the top and burn because you're less dense than lava?
I believe so.
Okay.
It's good to know. Nobody's
said that. We've never tested it.
Yeah. You should test that.
We should test that.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Tom Sachs was telling me he knows some guys that did the lava game on a driving trip from New York to the Key West and back.
You mean the floor is made of lava?
They never touched the ground. They got in their car and they drove to Key West and back, never leaving the car, never touching the ground. So that when they filled up with gas, they had to pull up close enough to be able to stand on the running thing of the car.
Oh my God.
Actually fill up with gas without ever touching the ground.
And that's how Tom Sachs's car exploded.
No, it wasn't Tom. It was friends of his.
Oh, okay.
Apparently it was a freaking nightmare.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
They had to pack out all their waste as well.
Yeah. Don't think about that.
Speaking of other adventures.
It will burn.
And speaking of waste.
Yes.
Yeah. You also went to Burning Man. And I was surprised that I didn't see that much drone footage out of Burning Man. Like, you had the most prominent stuff and you did some cool live feeds from that.
Yeah.
But I thought that this year would have been the year.
I did too. And last year, I think, was maybe the year so far for drone footage.
Because 2013.
Well, because there were no rules yet. I mean, there were guidelines. Yeah. And this year
Did anyone get hit last year?
I'm sure people got hit. I mean, certainly structures were hit. I haven't seen any of that specific footage. People tend not to. Well, I guess they post that stuff usually.
But, depends on the person.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but this year.
Yeah, this year there was a organized registration. So 200. They capped it at 200 registered drone pilots. There was a big waiting list of 80 or 90. So it was very popular. So you'd show up. Actually, this is my sticker from Burning Man. This is the number 237, and you have a matching one on your radio. And there were strict rules. Basically, you couldn't fly within, 20 feet of any person, 100 feet from any structure or art car. And at Burning Man, that's very hard.
Yeah, how would you land?
I just caught it, and I just didn't count myself as a person. But a lot of people just landed in an open area, which is terrible because there's that alkaline dust there, which gets into everything.
Mm. Right.
So you don't want to take off or land from.
So the, you're the doing there. The launch like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you just launch it off your hand and you catch it. And so my footage, if you look at the reel that's up there, it's all, it's sort of far away. It's far away. It's dust storm stuff. It's kind of landscapey. Oh,
I know that if you add, let's say, inflatable protector on the bottom, so if it fell out of the sky, it wouldn't hurt a person. You compromise your ability to fly well because you're adding wind resistance. Do you guys have ideas about ways to handle that problem?
Yeah, some people have tethered them, which doesn't actually solve that problem, but makes it then a tethered camera,
right?
Which may remove it from FAA jurisdiction.
Oh, that's just a technicality.
That's a technicality, yeah.
As opposed to a safety.
Well, I mean, last year there was actually a quadcopter style blimp that people were flying around with red cameras.
Oh.
Which did get around that problem.
Quite reasonable.
Yeah, that would work. We're experimenting with, I don't know, parachutes. And
right,
you see these, you see footage of quads that rotate really quickly, you know, if they lose one motor.
Yeah.
So you have lift in all, on all areas.
Right.
That would probably spin the camera off in our case, but, that's all in the research phase now. So currently, you know, what people are doing is they're flying X8 designs, like, you know, coaxial, motors. So you have two motors at every point.
Right.
And then if one fails, you can do it. But none of them prevent fast descent if you, for example, have power failure.
Yeah.
Right. That's still a big problem. And this is why the regulation stuff needs to be addressed at some point.
So a super small airbag that inflates on proximity, like the Mars lander?
Yeah.
It could go. That's the bouncing ball approach.
Compressed air.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. I mean, DJI actually sells a parachute for the big ones. And it's not meant to protect your equipment. It's meant to protect whatever's under it.
Right.
So your copter will probably
break. What's a deploy mechanism for that? It's another RC switch?
No, it's actually bank angle and mode. So like if you power off and you bank the thing, it deploys.
Oh. Or if you're descending too fast,
yeah, it
probably
has some inputs and, you know, we can intelligently
deploy. That's cool. This is all the frontier.
So what's the next adventure? Do you have it slated?
I'm going to France tomorrow.
This is what it's like to have lunch. Trying to schedule lunch with you is hilarious. Well, I'm in France right now.
Yeah, I'll be back Friday. And then...
wow.
Yeah, this month is pretty busy. But
what are you filming
stuff,
in France?
Can I talk about it? I'm not talking about the filming part, but basically it's a diving related launch, and I'm in a book that's coming out. And so I'm going for that launch
in
the south of France. So I'm going to bring one of these and fly. And someone was arrested in Paris recently for flying. So I will not be flying in super touristy areas.
Prague, do that, right?
Yep.
Yeah. That great Prague.
There's no rules
next
in Prague. Iron Curtain.
What are your dream things to shoot? Like before the regulation gets too restrictive.
Well, hopefully the regulation will become a comet will actually enable more interesting shoots because things are being closed off one by one, you know, like towns are starting to limit usage.
Here's what I want. A pair of cameras hooked up to an Oculus Rift so I can live my dream of flying.
I have all the parts.
Let's do it.
You know, we have a board that talks to multiple cameras.
I want
to
do that. That's and then we'll get the wing rig.
Yes, yes.
The wing rig is the best thing
I've ever done.
We
have to find a way for me to test it. I can't believe I wasn't available last time.
The wing rig. So you get someone else to fly it and you just watch it in real time.
Or you can tie the control. Yeah, you tie the control of the wings to the RC.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So I can bank, and I can do this, and I could ride thermals out at Fort Funston.
I flew underneath 101 with that thing until I augured up into the bottom of the freeway.
A virtual freeway.
Virtual freeway. Right, virtual flying. But it felt real until I hit.
And then didn't get hurt.
And then didn't, plaster.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. So the dream.
I'm jealous.
Dream locations?
Yeah, dream locations.
I mean, the volcano is really.
I was going to say, it's hard to top that.
It's really hard to top.
Have you done tornado stuff?
That's another idea that's been, been floating around.
If you're looking at places that you're going to be in extreme mortal peril and that there'll be cool video.
Yeah.
Tornadoes.
I mean, that would be excellent. You know, and you know you're going to lose it if you do that. So you record the footage locally and you use it for science.
Exactly.
Or put sensors on it and work with researchers.
A SpaceX launch or something?
Oh, well, those were done with DJI S800s.
They do the test flights, right? When they
The grasshopper stuff, and those are already shot with hexacopters. Mm. You know, we weren't flying them, but
you want to be a cinematographer.
It's perfect. I mean, if you watch it, that's the only way you can get that kind of launch.
I can see the comment section filling up with suggestions. You've shown up just for long enough, Eric, to make me feel really jealous about what you're doing, because it sounds amazing. Sounds totally like flying for 12 hours, driving for 15, filming, driving for 15 more, and flying for 12 more does not sound like too much of a price to pay. That sounds, I would do that in a...
How long were you shooting? 20 hours, you said?
It was about a 20-hour day. Yeah, it was... I was ready to keep going, because when we left... There was actually Northern Lights appeared.
Oh my God.
We'd driven to see the flow, and there's all this beautiful steam coming off the flow. And I had this Sony A7S, which shoots in darkness. So I was shooting these beautiful kind of steam, you know, with the red glow in the background. And then in the footage, you can see the Northern Lights appear. And I was taking a time lapse sequence. And then the other car started honking. We gotta go. You know, it was just, everyone was so tired. I mean, totally understandable.
Yeah.
But,
the
you know,
Northern Lights showed up.
I mean, at the end
they
of
always
a
day, show up late to the party.
They always show up late.
At the end of a day like that, I have to assume you feel great. You feel great. You feel great. You get in the car and you're unconscious.
Well, actually, the bumper fell off of the car on the way back.
I'm no expert, but that's not recommended.
It's not recommended, and so that took some time.
It
took some
off?
Time to pull. No, it just, the roads were so terrible that the bumper, and unfortunately, only came off like 7/8 of the way.
Oh no!
And so we had to pull all the tools out to like get the rest of it off, so you could stick it in the car to drive back.
I probably could have been useful at that point.
Actually, that would have been great. I was just taking pictures, to be honest. Like, I was shooting video of the guys fixing it because I thought it was funny. And then when we got back, we had to look at the footage, you know, so we were still really amped up because the footage, we couldn't look at it, you know, we had a long drive back. And,
right.
And so if you look at the video, the behind the scenes, I look terrible. Like, I just look so tired because that was the next morning after, you know, 2 hours of sleep. And I knew we had to then drive back to Reykjavik to fly out.
Wow.
Awesome. Awesome.
It was awesome. It was really great.
Thank you so much
for stopping by, Eric.
Yeah, and really appreciate
it. This was absolutely a blast. And I mean, we keep posting what you're doing on Tested and hopefully we'll see you again in the not too distant future.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully in a collaborative sort of
way. You gave me an idea just now, and I think maybe we'll take you up on it.
Yeah. It'd be good.
Cool. All right.
Awesome.
So that'll do it for us this week. As always, if you have comments, leave them on the site or on YouTube. Reviews on iTunes, upvotes or downvotes on YouTube. It's all good. We like all the feedback. So thank you guys. We'll see you all next week.
Clearly.
Adam likes the upvotes. He reads all the comments, though. See you guys later.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.